All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of O365A. In this episode, we have a special guest, Microsoft MVP and also fellow Canadian, Joanne Klein, to talk to us about her experience about, compliance and governance and anything else from her vast knowledge. So, Joanne, why don't you introduce yourself and where you're from?
Sure. Hi, everyone. Thanks for inviting me on your show. My name is Joanne Klein. I'm an Office 365 Office Apps and Services MVP for a couple years now, and I own my own consulting company, which means I work with companies. They kind of reach out to me when they're struggling a little bit on trying to figure out what to do in Office 365, mostly in the data protection and retention space of that. So yeah, that's what I spend my days doing, and I'm super busy right now.
Yeah, I think we definitely all are. So that's a perfect lead in. When you are dealing with customers during this time, what is your typical approach to responding when a customer is asking for, we want our tenant to be configured as per best practice?
I'm not a fan of that term, to be honest with you. Anything best practice is just, kind of danger zone for me. So there's some better ways of doing things, but I would say a good approach would be what Microsoft calls the shared responsibility model. And it makes a lot of sense when you think about trying to address all of the aspects of your environment. So that's data, identity, and devices, basically. It can kind of be grouped into those three things, and then each of those pillars, if you will, kind of have lots of configuration in them. But if you can kind of group your services and your expertise and your configurations around those three pieces, I think you're setting yourself up for success. So the shared responsibility aspect of that is an organization has to take care of all that stuff. So get your people in place. There's some things I'm probably going to talk about a little bit later on what you can actually configure in there. And then Microsoft is responsible for protecting the Microsoft 365 service behind the scenes. So together, that's a good approach to rolling it out in your environment.
Perfect.
Yeah. And you mentioned identity, of course. The thing I'm finding, other people are finding, is everything from a security governance perspective really starts with that identity, just making sure you have your house in order and you've locked down and follow best practices for identity. But what are some like the key tenant settings you find are really good to review with a customer when you take on a new customer?
Well, I'm of those three pillars. My focus, and usually where customers call me in on, is on the data side. But on the identity side, certainly there's some controls in place like MFA. Do you have, so both internal, external, and guest, kind of how do you handle those identities in your environment? Do you have a strategy around that? Do you allow anonymous sharing? Things like that. On the device side, I would say, things like Intune, have you configured some conditional access if you're on an unmanaged device? These are all decisions you need to make at that kind of global level. And then on the data side, which is where I focus, there is a ton of controls, data loss prevention, sensitivity labels. What else is there? Lots of the controls kind of lead into that, like will you, allow for group creation behind the scenes, for everybody in your organization? Because if you allow that, then things might get kind of out of control a little bit. So think about what your strategy is on that so you can kind of move forward in a controlled way, I guess. So another thing on the DLP, I would say, because of the mechanism and how DLP works, that sensitive by default setting, everybody should have, if you're using DLP, everybody should have that enabled in their tenant, which means net new content coming into your environment should be sensitive by default until the DLP engine can catch up and and identify that the content is sensitive in nature, if it is. So that's kind of a few things that I would check at a very high level.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes sense. It's good.
So in sort of continuing on with sort of that, you touched on sort of like the Office 365 creation.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, how do you feel or sort of what is your approach or is it dependent on the client with regards to, you know, do you embrace the end users to create their own Office 365 groups and like self-service provisioning, maybe with templates and stuff like that? Or is it more recommending the IT like request control type of capability?
Well, in my experience, I have yet to run into a customer that has just opened up the gates without at least having some controls behind the scenes. So I'm all for letting an end user provision them, but only if kind of the homework has been done in advance by the IT group. And by that, I mean setting up the appropriate controls, having your sensitivity classifications, and being able to automate the building of some of those controls into whatever it is being provisioned, a Microsoft team or even just a SharePoint site that isn't backed by a group or is. But that takes a lot of work to get there. But I think it's worth it because you're always trying to strike that perfect balance, which you're never going to get, right? But you want to make it quick enough that end users can get there, but still have enough controls that you can kind of sleep at night knowing that, okay, it's going to be okay. And then another thing I want to say is the difference between kind of front loading that approval process and back loading kind of some follow up is don't put so much stuff in the front, like, you know, we're going to manually approve this request form and follow up and do they need training? And sometimes all of that isn't worth it. Sometimes it's better just to put those controls in place, but get it provisioned and then follow up after the fact with maybe training or maybe you didn't get the sensitivity setting on that site just right. Just kind of taking a balanced approach to it, I would say is the right formula, and that's going to be different for every organization, as you said. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, that's always an interesting topic, Joanne. It's one that's contentious in a lot of client scenarios, for sure. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit and ask you what your favorite compliance feature is in Microsoft 365.
Okay. There's a lot of good work going on in the Compliance Center right now. I think it's top of mind in Microsoft. So I would say sensitivity labels in general and the efforts they're putting in there to have a lot of that auto apply so it can basically label your content at scale across your environment. I think that is super cool, the capabilities that you can do once everything is labeled, because of course that sensitivity lives with the document no matter where it is, right? So it can drive a lot of other capabilities in the back end, which you see all over the place. So I've been involved in a couple of the preview programs and I really like what I see there, and I think it's pretty cool. Trainable classifiers is a very close second. I have not worked with that yet, but that's another great thing, I think, in order to kind of detect data across your environment, because there's so much being created right now. There's no way you can keep on top of this just in a manual means. It's just too much. So you need to rely on that machine learning and those kind of smarter capabilities to be able to do this at scale. And I would say another thing is the Content Explorer, which is kind of I think this is in preview as well. It's data classification. So once you start applying sensitivity labels and retention labels to your environment, there's a really cool kind of graphical representation of this that you can see across. Right now, I think it's just Exchange, SharePoint. I think OneDrive is coming. And you can see across all your entire tenant where stuff has been labeled, and you can even, with the right permissions, you could drill down to the actual email or document and what that label was. So there's, you know, teams in an organization, risk, compliance, anybody in the records management space is going to want to use those tools to get a handle, oversight on the data that's in there. So that's a really cool feature as well.
Awesome. Thank you.
And you're talking about sensitivity labels, retention labels, you know, auto labeling.
Yeah.
But I guess coming, you know, before you can have machine learning kind of classify everything, you have to come up with that classification scheme. So what is your approach to start that journey with a new customer?
Yeah. Keep it simple is the first rule. Definitely. There was an example of a company, and it was a couple of Ignites ago. It was a customer story, and they were trying to come up with their own sensitivity classification, and they came up with this complicated hierarchy of labels and rolled it out, and nobody knew what anything meant, and except the team that put this thing together. So they threw that out the window and they started over, and they came up with five, I think. Microsoft has four sensitivity labels, which is pretty small considering they're a huge organization. So keep it simple. You need to make it so end users understand it and know when to apply what. So that's thing number one. And then on each one of those, your security, compliance, risk teams, legal teams all need to kind of work together and decide, okay, so something's confidential. What does that mean to us? What's confidential to our organization? And then what do we want to do about that? What kind of controls do we want to implement with that? So that's kind of the strategy. It's not an IT task to go through. To configure it at the end of it, sure, but to come up with the labels and the controls is really those security and compliance teams.
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah.
And Joanne, related closely to content, of course, is data loss prevention. And I've used that feature in Exchange Online now. Of course, it's applicable to most of the Office 365 workloads.
Yeah.
And what I've been impressed with is they have templates per verticals that you can apply. Mm. But what are some of the challenges you've seen out in the field just practically implementing DLP?
I would say a couple is... First of all, DLP kind of takes a broad brush approach to applying sensitivity, which is kind of it's markedly different from sensitivity labels. One thing I have noticed is with DLP, one organization I was working with was trying to use DLP to protect one of their customer number in communication. But what they discovered is, and this is more sensitive information type limitation, I suppose, but it showed itself in DLP, is it was so close to a driver license format and they couldn't distinguish one from the other. So getting that format right, so DLP conditions are triggered at the right time, you know, that kind of monitoring and adjusting can be very challenging depending on what it is that you're looking for. They've got kind of the pre-configured 100-ish, I think, sensitive information types out there that are pretty good. But if you want to do something custom outside of that, it takes a lot of testing and trial and error. And then there's the delay. I think I talked about earlier about the because in SharePoint and OneDrive, anyway, the way the DLP engine works is it's reliant on the search crawling mechanism that's not instantaneous. And as a matter of fact, right now, some people are saying it's slowed down a little bit because of the demand on services in the cloud. So because of that, you can upload a document that has sensitive data and it can be exposed for quite a period of time before the DLP scan engine scans it and then it's okay to be shared or whatever your control is. So that is a struggle with some people or some organizations, which is why I suggested enable that sensitivity or sensitive by default setting so you're not exposed to that risk, I guess, which is a PowerShell only setting at this moment, I believe. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Awesome. One other thing, there's no integration between sensitivity labels and DLP, which that is coming and that will be a really good thing. So right now, I think you can trigger DLP off of either sensitive information or a retention label, but pretty soon you'll also be able to tie it in with a sensitivity label, which will kind of come full circle, which will be an awesome thing. Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. So something relatively new or very new is this thing called communication compliance. And yeah. The more I read about it, the more it sounds really cool. So maybe just talk a little bit about that and how you see organizations using this feature functionality.
It's interesting. I gave a demo to an organization a couple of weeks ago, and in the room was somebody from HR and a lawyer, so legal and HR. And they were blown away by this tool. They could not believe how powerful it was and how it can see everything that's going on in the tenant. You can see what people are doing a one-on-one chat on, or in a channel conversation, right? Or what's in a file. So to be honest, it kind of scared the woman in HR. Her immediate response was, oh, we have to get our policies in place. If we're going to enable this and turn it on, we have to make sure we're kind of set up to, you know, communicate this to staff, that we are monitoring your conversations. Here's kind of the, we have zero tolerance for maybe harassment or anything like that. Have all those guidelines in place and then enable it. So you need to have kind of your ducks in a row. On the legal side, he had some comments for that as well. Yes, they needed to do that, but he was more interested in using that tool for more like FINRA regulations, where maybe you have two teams or two departments in an organization, and team one can't talk to team two because of conflict of interest, let's say. So he got two quite different use cases there. But it's a really powerful tool. But I guess my takeaway is the technology is there and it's great, but you need to have your policies and your processes in place outside of IT before you can kind of entertain the idea of doing this. Because it is asking HR, let's say, to, you know, dedicate part of a resource to monitor all of these things that are going to start coming at them when they're detected. And some may be false positives, but you have to go through them all, right? So, yeah, it's a really cool feature.
Nice.
So I guess maybe in adding on to that, you know, we were sort of talking a little bit offline beforehand on how, you know, busy things have gotten recently from with regards to COVID-19, like from a work perspective. And maybe you can give us like what your recent experience is from a governance and compliance side of things. You know, has that increased or has sort of come to more to the forefront and sort of trying to be fast tracked with regards to what's happening in the world today, and people just, they need to get the applications working, and like how is it affecting you during this?
Well, on my main client that I work with, our team that used to be a Scrum team, we actually moved to Kanban style, and we had one whole kind of group, whatever you call that, dedicated to COVID-19, having to do with, you know, getting people set up right, lots of things in the security and the compliance space. So it was top of mind, definitely. Now that's kind of slowed down a little bit, but there was, risks like employees being at home and not having a fax machine, let's say, that, or whatever their process was before that they felt that they had to communicate with a customer. Well, now they're sending, in some cases, very sensitive information through an email. And, you know, are you set up for that? Is that the right thing to do or not? Which it really isn't. So just dealing with things like that, right? Like end users aren't really, sometimes they just use the tool that they know will get the job done, but it often comes at a security risk for doing so. So there's been a couple of stories where we're trying to implement different DLP controls or sensitivity labels or a different process altogether to kind of get around this. And I just wanted to give a plug. I don't know if you guys stumbled across this, but Microsoft Because of people working from home and they're seeing a marked increase in like phishing attempts and just non-tech savvy people working from home, maybe getting caught on some of these things. They partnered, I think it's called Terra Nova Security, with them, and they're offering free cybersecurity training. So it's security.microsoft.com/attack-simulator-trainings. So it's videos, like meant for the end user. It's videos, infographics. It's, I took a couple of them. It's actually really good. So I would recommend that to any company that's maybe isn't kind of ahead of the curve right now, and they're wanting something. All of that is laid out for them already. So it was pretty cool.
Could definitely have to check that out. I wasn't aware of that. So that's really awesome. Maybe a little bit shift back to DLP. What are some of the DLP scenarios that you've come across, maybe during COVID or maybe before, with regards to Microsoft Teams? I know with DLP and Teams, it is an upstep in the licensing. You have to have like an E5 or a compliance SKU. What are some of those scenarios that you're seeing that companies are going to that level of licensing to get?
Well, I would, I don't know if I have a long list, but I would say a couple of fronts. One is sharing any kind of sensitive data through Teams. You want to have a DLP policy set up just to target Teams chat and channel conversations. If you're on a team talking with an external person, you want to make sure that you're protecting yourself. So usually that's PII information. It can be whatever, credit card information or whatever you see. So I see lots of organizations doing that. It's not DLP, but I was going to say also retention on chats. I see lots of companies almost seeing that as a bit of a liability, to be honest with you. So they're putting quite a sharp retention on Teams chats just to get rid of them. More of a liability than a channel conversation, let's say, which is kind of treated like a bit like an email conversation. Chats are much shorter in length. So those are kind of some of the scenarios. I'm not sure if I answered enough of your question there, but...
Yeah, I mean, with the retention on chat, you can go down to like 24 hours. I highly recommend not going that far.
Yeah, that's right. I've never gone down to one day. I've gone down to 30 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which does take people by surprise. Make sure you tell staff that this is going to happen to them, because they'll get angry that they've lost stuff that they had in their chat.
Yeah, and to your point, Joanne, I remember when Microsoft brought that feature, being able to go down to one day for DLP. I think that was just last December they actually, or maybe November, they released that. But that surprised me. But I guess highly regulated organizations, you really don't want that risk. So you would shrink it down to that size. But yes. Great point. I actually never thought that, this will impact end users.
Oh, yeah.
And not see the chat, right?
Yes, yes. And I've, at this one company, lots of end users reached out, can you get my chats back? Of course, you know, you're going to get into that scenario. So just make sure you communicate anything like this that you do to companies.
Yeah. And then just quickly on the DLP front, I've used it for a long time. You know, it's matured quite a bit. It's gotten a lot better. But what have you seen in terms of how this feature set has matured, not just, you know, for Exchange Online or Teams, but just right across the whole M365 ecosystem?
Well, I think it's part of a larger protection story, and which includes a variety of modern workloads. So not only Exchange, but Teams, you know, SharePoint, OneDrive, chats. So any kind of modern digital workplace is using all of these tools to communicate. So all of these features that we used to use kind of in the legacy world that traditionally only kind of focused on Exchange, they need to kind of modernize and be able to cover off all of these workloads. So I'd say that would be the fundamental significant change that's gone on with DLP. and many other features as well. But it's only kind of one feature, I think, of kind of the entire protection story that any company needs to do. So I think you still need sensitivity labels in addition to DLP. And you still need to have a good external sharing strategy, and all of those things kind of come together for your protection and compliance story. So it is a challenging thing to do for sure, because there's, you know, sometimes a team of people all kind of toggling switches and working together for the end user, kind of working with the content and wanting to collaborate with sometimes with external people. So, yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when talking about, you know, those challenges and stuff, and given that Microsoft Teams is sort of at the forefront of every company right now, because it is really the primary tool that most companies are using to communicate with each other, what are some of the challenges that you're seeing implementing the DLP within Teams?
Well, probably the delay would be one for sure. Although it's pretty quick. I think my experience has been like seconds, right? Yeah. After you enter something sensitive, it comes back. I would say whoever is configuring DLP really needs to understand the Teams architecture. So when you say you're deploying DLP against Teams, what does that mean? Are you just talking about the chats? Are you talking about the channel conversations? What about the files you share in there? And are you protecting the SharePoint / OneDrive sites behind there to do that? So you really need to have a broad strategy on how you're going to implement DLP in any company. So I would like to think that anybody that's working with DLP has that understanding, but if they don't, they absolutely need to understand that. And that same understanding, of course, comes into play for retention, for e-discovery, for lots of other features. So, different things are stored in different places for different reasons. So you need to kind of have a handle on that so you can implement these tools in a smart way, my opinion.
Nice. So just to like circle back to retention, in Teams specifically, which is, a little bit more near and dear to us and what we focus on a day-to-day basis these days, especially during COVID. What about retention in Teams and chats and channel conversations, documents? Like, are you getting asked about this? Do you see customers actually implementing retention in Teams? It sounds like you are. And what, like, lastly, what kind of ways can orgs like approach this? You know, I think you started to touch on that a bit earlier.
Yeah. Well, a good place to start, probably kind of the easiest place to start, if you will, would be defining if you have a strategy for chats or channel conversations. If you're in any kind of a regulated industry, you likely have some kind of a retention period on one of those two things. So implement that for sure. Where it sometimes gets muddy is when you start talking about the files behind the scenes. Because retention, you can either have kind of broad retention coverage through a policy, which is super simple to implement, but the downside of that is everything has the same retention, which it's easier to say that on a chat in a channel conversation, not so easy to say that on a document, because a document can be many, many different things, each with different retention periods, which is why you get into the more kind of targeted retention label scenario, which takes lots of time and effort working with the records management team and their file plan and translating that into retention labels that you publish across your environment. So right now you can't deploy a retention label to a Teams chat or a channel conversation. It's just a policy. So it's policy covers everything, whatever you set that rule up to be. I think you can do it differently for different users if you want, like your C-suite, maybe you retain it for longer for them. But that's as granular as you can get. On the document side, you can get right down to the document level if you wanted. So it's a huge area. And on the document side, lots of companies, I would say, are fairly new to retention in Microsoft 365. Yeah, by and large.
Good. Thank you.
Awesome. So, I mean, I think that's it for all of our questions, Joanne. You crushed all of them. It was fantastic. Thanks. Thanks very much. And thanks, you know, for coming on. We're really excited to have you on and join us today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And for our listeners, you can reach Joanne at her website, joannecklein.com.
Yeah.
And I'll include that in the blog post and also the attack simulator I'll also include in the blog post as well, so that you can get access to that as well. So
awesome.
Again, thanks. Thanks for coming on, and thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch you on our next episode.
Thanks everyone.
See ya.
Bye.